How's everybody doing out there?
Good evening.
Dance.
Dance and dance. If you hadn't quite figured it out yet, we are Movement Museum. We got a whack of people, and there's an echo in my microphone. I'm not trying to figure out why. Something's happening here because I'm not being picked up by my microphone. Maybe I won't talk. This is Zeke. I got a full house in here. We got
Finn.
We have
Karen.
Fawn.
And we're going to be talking about dance on your radio this afternoon. We got a full house, as I've mentioned. Finn and Fawn have combined to do some amazing sort of stuff that I'm very, very much looking forward to hearing.
Our powers combined to create a fantastic new version of Finn and Fawn talking for a long time.
and what, pray tell, are you talking about?
We are looking back on our experiences at Bust a Move 6, which happened 2-3 weekends ago and was fantastic. So we had to get in on that and talk about it. And here is our rendition of that.
Okay. And then I have, which one, Doro, who isn't here today. Got to figure out what's wrong with this microphone. It's making me I'm gonna have to switch seats.
I think it's your headphones. You sound fine to me.
You sound good over here.
Yeah, you're really good here.
Wow. Oh, wow. You sound so good. Oh, wait, hold on.
Hold on. Last week was the week you guys made me blush.
The listeners are probably just smiling super giddy because they're like, wow, that sounds really good. Uh-huh. Perhaps they're also smiling because it's 26 degrees out.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Woo!
And it is 2:05, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. And beyond the Bust a Move stuff that Finn and Fawn have, we also have Doro's Dance Quote of the Week. And then there is the amazing calendar with amazing shows we've all seen. And then I'm going to rant live on the air. At which point, I think it is probably about time. Yeah, and Karen, what did you see? Did you see anything last week or this week?
Oh my God, it's all blurring together.
I'm sorry.
I know
for
that I'm about to launch into a cornucopia of dance viewing at the FTA and off FTA festivals. In fact, there's so much happening. I have to keep it written down in front of me every day, otherwise I don't know where I have to be.
But very much excited about what's coming up. I'm going to see Sasha Waltz on Saturday night, who's an very, very well-known, respected choreographer, contemporary choreographer from Germany. Very excited about that one. And yeah, maybe after I can mention a little bit more about what's coming up. But yeah, I've been holding out.
Oh, okay. And so, yeah, Finn and Fawn, if you can explain this whole thing, because I saw you working up until the last minute on it, and I am intensely interested. Uh-huh. But if you can give me some background on it, please.
Well, Fawn.
Well, Finn.
This is kind of how a lot of the discussion went. So Bust a Move is this competition that happens, a street dance competition that happens, I don't know if it's like annually or more or less, but this is the sixth time through that they've had this awesome event in Montreal. It's like the biggest street dance competition in Canada, so really huge deal. And so when I heard about it, I was like, whoa, I've got to see this. I've never seen anything like this before. And Infon heard about it. He's like, "Ooh, I've got to see this. I've seen this kind of thing a lot, and it's still cool." So so we trooped off and checked out stuff together, sort of, you know, shared powers and interests and energy and opinions, and came out with this description of the competition itself, what it's like to like, what is a street dance competition like, what kinds of things are they doing, what kinds of things are odd, interesting, fun, and then at the same time also talking about the workshops and what that was like happening the next day, because, you know, if you're going to bring in big names, you know, might as well learn from them too. So so it was a really fantastic weekend.
Mm-hmm.
That we then talked about.
How about we play this?
Go for it.
Who better to quote than one of the leading female dance pioneers of the 20th century, Martha Graham? She often said, "Great dancers are not great because of their technique, they're great because of their passion." This quote can seem really simple and obvious, but when you realize that Martha Graham started to dance at the age of 22, passion is really all she could rely on if she wanted to make a name for herself. And she certainly did make her mark. She not only founded her company in 1926, which is a feat in itself, she developed a technique to call her own, and it revolutionized the world of dance. She experimented with the most basic elements of human movement and developed a style that explored the notion of contraction and release. Breath and gravity were the foundation for the Graham technique, and her sharp, expressive choreography and her weird floored work shook the world of dance in the 1930s. Throughout her career, she created 181 ballets and has been the mentor to future great choreographers such as Merce Cunningham and Twyla Tharp. As she continued dancing well into her 60s, Martha Graham constantly reflected on what an artist should be. In her text, "I Am a Dancer," her philosophy and insight into a dancer's world is intense and complex. There's one passage in particular that is incredibly poignant. She writes, "Dancing appears glamorous, easy, delightful. But the path to achieve this paradise is not easier than any other. There's fatigue so great that the body cries, even in its sleep. There are times of complete frustration, and there are daily small deaths. Ambition is simply not enough, and necessity is everything." In those few lines, she completely expresses the reality of all dancers, and that necessity to dance, to move, to express the body's full potential, is the essence of dance. For Martha Graham, movement just never lied, and I completely agree. There needs to be that passion there to govern the dancer throughout their career. Otherwise, their movement will be lost and wasted. To read up more on Martha Graham, you can go to the company's website at www.marthagraham.org. This is Dora with her dance quote of the week for Movement Museum at CKUT 90.3 FM.
That was my bad. I hit the wrong button.
So but it was Dora's good, though.
Yes.
Yes.
Today's show is happening in a non-linear fashion.
Getting into the spirit of this non-linear stuff. Mm-hmm. Deep breath. Okay, now how about we try that Bust a Move thing?
Okay.
C
CKUT 90.3 FM brings you another episode, a special episode of Finn
and Fonz,
Montreal Dancing Diaries. On May 9th, 2009, Bust a Move happened.
Bust a Move 6, yeah, May 9th, 2009, very cool. Dance competition with many forms of dance. There was poppy.
There was whacking, there was house, there was b-boying. There was hip-hop in pairs, which was cool.
Oh, and locking in pairs, too.
Oh, yeah, locking in pairs. Yeah, yeah, awesome questions for that. The competitions were happening like all day. There was the breakdancing stuff going on through the morning and afternoon.
Prelims were for everything in the early afternoon, I think.
They had these prelims going on all day, and then at night was the like finals for all of these things. Now, finals was like top eight, top four competitors or competing groups to show us their, sort of, their final battling through to get to the end. I don't know if you've been to other dance competitions, but this was pretty different from what I've seen before. People all over the place, like it was in Club Soda, and it was pretty full. You know, upstairs was pretty full with people at tables and stuff, and downstairs there's like people all over the floor, people like climbing on top of chairs to be able to see the dance floor, people standing on tables and along the walls. I might have been perched up on the wall for a while, just to be able to see what was going on. Now, what's weird about these competitions is, like, so you have to imagine there's, like, a ring of people. And by ring, I mean, like, you know, five or six layers deep of people circling this kind of stage area. And in the front of the stage, sort of in front of all these rings, there's the judges that are sitting there at tables that they can, like, take notes and better watch. And then the MC calls forward the competitors for in pairs, so competing individuals or competing, you know, pairs coming forward. And you have two different time, and they go back and forth, and they have like so many rounds, you know, one round, two round. So, you know, the music starts, and they kind of, you know, figure out who's gonna go first, and then someone just kind of jumps in and starts showing off their stuff. Within each of these, there was one side versus the other side. Now, how they interacted while they were competing varied hugely, probably mostly with the individuals, but in terms of whether or not, for example, they were paying attention to each other when they were dancing, you know, some people were like totally in their own world and just it was like them and the music. And like that was that. Other people were so paying attention to the other person that there was like a lot of aggressive eye contact. There was gesturing towards the competitor. There was an engagement there with their opponent that, you know, was totally a focus for their actions. You know, people were getting into each other's faces, and like there's rules like you can't touch each other and like that kind of thing. Like, people mostly respected, but you still, it was very clear that while this person was dancing and showing their stuff, it was their stuff against someone. And then other times people would turn their attention to the audience and they would, you know, do stuff against the competitor, and then they would turn to the crowd and be like, hype with me, you know, appreciate what I'm doing, I'm going to communicate with all you guys. So then it became of like a stage kind of situation where there was a performer and a receptive group. And now, I mean, the audience would respond whether or not they're being paid attention to, because if it was like an awesome move, you know, you'd hear cheers and all that stuff coming from the all the different people assembled. But if there was an acknowledgement of the crowd, that always hyped it up a lot more, you know. The competitors can be up in the other person's face, you know. They can be totally winning over the crowd, but what counts is what the judge thinks. So what was cool about Bust a Move and a lot of other competitions is that, you know, you try to get great judges to come in and adjudicate, and this year Bust a Move had amazing people there.
Yeah, the judge for b-boying was a local guy, Zig, and then a guy from New York, I think, Tony Stott. Whacking had Tyrone Proct from the original Whack Dancers. I think he's originally from, pretty sure he's originally from the East Coast, maybe Philly. Obviously he was out in LA with Soul Train, traveled the world, and now I think he's back east again.
When I like looked up Whacking on YouTube, he came up as being the like the guy. The guy.
And no, the poppin' judge was Poppin' Pete, who is obviously one of the most amazing in the world. actor. He's the brother of Boogie Sam, pioneer of popping. And that was like, to me, having Pete right there was really amazing. I think probably with the exception of Tyrone, Pete is pretty unequivocally the most influential dancer amongst all the judges there.
Okay, then there was Adesla, who's the judge of locking. I first saw him on a videotape with Fable, Wiggles, Darren Henson, who later became a hip-hop choreographer for NSYNC and Britney Spears, I think. Adesla's always been a very flexible dancer, both literally and physically. Like, he's very limber, but he's also very flexible in terms of styles.
And, of course, Bootcamp Pat from Montreal, who's been holding down locking in the city for a number of years. One of the first people to represent this dance in Montreal.
House was Khalif, who is a house dance pioneer from New York. Hip-hop, they had two judges. They had Luther Brown, who's from Canada, who's recognized as Canada's best hip-hop choreographer. Buddha Stretch, who's a definite pioneer in New York hip-hop and worldwide, from Mop Tops, I believe.
If you guys go back to the Dancing Diaries 4, I gave a kind of description of what I could tell from the classes, what these were about. To give an updated version, at least when it comes to the dance floor, there's a huge, huge amount of overlap. There are like moves that are very special to each form that come up a lot, but at the same time, I wasn't expecting to see floor work, for example, in the house competition, in terms of like, you know, being kind of on their hands, their legs flailing, and like that kind of thing. See, I was really confused by hip-hop, I have to say. It was done in pairs, and I had no idea what was and wasn't included in hip-hop, because it seemed like everything that I'd seen in every other style was thrown in there. It was really a huge mix. Now, what was cool about the pairs is that they obviously had like certain sequences prepped. So at a cue, they would start something together, and they'd have this like choreographed, following along each other, parallel sequence thing. And so it'd be fun to see like that pattern, and then one of them would like break out. Locking was also done in pairs, and that one I think was the dance that seemed most like what I'd seen before. So I did like one.
So it resembled the
locking.
Most what you would learn in class.
Yeah, I could recognize a lot more of the moves of locking, and it wasn't the same kind of aggressive motion as was more part of the hip hop competition. There seemed to be a really wide range of what people could do and call it popping. My hat's off to Popping Pete, because there's no way I could have compared how this person's technique was better or worse than someone else's, because they were doing things very differently, and they were reacting to the music very differently. You know, the people in the final rounds, like, they were really good poppers. I was very impressed, and I... Granted, I'm just at the very beginning of this, and so I'm all the more impressed, because I'm like, whoa, it'll take me years to do that, if ever. And I have to say, of all the finals of the different forms, the whacking was the one that the crowd got into the most, because it's the sassiest dance. And what I liked about these competitors is that they actually interacted with each other. There was a lot more tension and back and forthing between the people doing the whacking, just because it's so much about attitude and opposition and stuff like that. It was really fun to watch because there was a playfulness to it. At the same time, compared to like the popping, which granted this is a big part of the style, but like how clean the poppers were in terms of their motions, and how kind of messy the whacking was. Mm. When I would think that you'd aspire to similar degrees of firmness of motion. Like, they were already thinking about the next thing, and they weren't letting things really finish, you know? Because if you're like throwing your arm out there, pointing to the sky in this like dramatic way, like, get it up there, damn it. Don't let yourself wobble, don't relax it, don't let it get sloppy. But maybe whacking isn't here at the same level as some of the other things.
Well, I think it is a little newer than some of the other dances.
To be fair, also, these people had to go through many rounds to get to the end of this competition. And like, there was special extra whacking rounds.
By the end, they were like, listen, man, I already cured AIDS and cancer and solved world peace. Like, right now, I'm just going to talk about my dog, you know?
Like, they were very impressive in their stamina. Yeah. And resourcefulness. Yeah. And I mean, I think the last round was actually like four times going back and forth. Yeah. And that was pretty intense after they had already been going on and on. Yeah. So, I still, props to them. There is a little bit of controversy with the house competition, where there is some disagreement between the judge and people in the crowd, and there's a lot of...
There was a little bit of yelling.
There was a little bit of yelling. Yeah.
There was definitely, and the next day there was definitely a long debate.
It came to a head with dancing between
Tone McGregor from New York, New Jersey, actually,
and
Babson from Wanted, which is a crew from France. Babson's from Paris.
Okay, international house dancers, kind of amazing in town, taking this pretty seriously. So they're battling, and can you describe how their respective styles?
I remember from what I've seen, Babson traditionally is like, you know, super footwork guy, and then he also does a bit of stuff on the floor. He actually will do the equivalent of footwork but on his knees, and then he also gets into a little bit of lofting, which is like kind of that floor work stuff you were describing before. That's
lofting.
And like the dolphin dive. So, Tone is, his style is like, his style is about 2000, paranoia, it kind of looks like he's like playing basketball, his angles are constantly changing, his legs are a little wider, he'll do like heel toe moves with one leg, switch, turn, it's different.
Yeah, so what I saw was some guy moving around really quickly in ways that might be very complicated, but given like the height of the crowd, it was kind of hard for me to see the details of his footwork. I mean, he looked like he knew what he was doing, but he wasn't that showy. And then there was this other guy who was like way, way showy, and he was throwing in, you know, these motions, and the crowd would be like, ah, you know, because he would be on his knees doing stuff and then back up again, and then he'd be on his hands. In some ways it was like not that much like house, but at the same time it was also like really fun to watch. So what it sounded like it came down to is that the judge had the interpretation that it's not all about tricks, and what he was looking for was fundamentals and technique and an expression of the authenticity of house, to give it, you know, an authentic competition based on house, not going all crazy doing everything possible and just looking amazing. It was like, let's look like this genre, let's be true to this genre. And so he didn't go with the crazy flailing crowd pleaser, and the crowd was like not so pleased.
Right.
So we kind of had to get like reined in. But one of the things that surprised me about the response to this controversy is I've competed a lot in other avenues, and you know, I know that the judge's call is the judge's call, and you might disagree, but whatever, like you take it and you keep going, and it's not that big of a deal. To me, to see the organizer, specifically the MC, and people like really stepping up and telling the crowd, like, no, trust the judge, as if, like, that wasn't something that people were expected to do. I was surprised that it actually was treated like a big deal. Like, so people disagreed, whatever, it was kind of passing on it, you know?
Right.
Like, or at least that's what I would have assumed, you know? And I don't know, maybe it wouldn't have diffused, but I was like, are they making it into a bigger deal?
Maybe they were.
Than it needed to be?
Well, I think one thing that's interesting is that there is within these dance forms, you know, a bit of
challenging of authority.
Yeah.
Which I think makes it more important to articulate the authority when it is actually something that everybody is expected to trust. I guess coming from more formal dance forms, what struck me as being so cool about this competition style is that, like, it's not that strict. You are allowed to bring stuff in, and it does, in some ways, matter how people are responding. You know, if that's your musicality is coming through and everybody's picking up on it, doesn't that make you the better dancer? Like, who decides, how do you decide what makes a better dancer for these kinds of competitions? And so I was kind of taken aback at how much that sort of formal definition of good dancing in terms of like respecting the standards and respecting the genres had taken precedent in this case over the overall appreciation of, you know, getting the entire room to pay attention and enjoy it, you know?
You know, for the sake of journalistic integrity and non-bias, I'll leave my personal opinions outside, and what I'll say is that it's interesting to look at to look at an art form in any sense, because we're looking at a subjective judgment, but we're not looking at a democratic judgment at the same time.
For sure.
So, for example, I can say, dude, my friend Paul is the best guitarist ever. Jimi Hendrix, whatever, he's okay. And I may actually be able to like win an election within a local population, within a global population.
Of Paul versus Jimi.
Yeah, of Paul versus Jimi Hendrix, right? And I mean, certainly that can be done, let's say, you know, with saxophone, who's better, Coltrane or Kenny G, who sold more records. Well, that's very easy to measure, right? But who's better is a different thing. And what I guess I'm saying is that there has to be an interplay, because it's not simply, well, Coltrane's better because we're elites and we said so, but it's at the same time, it's not exactly, well, Kenny G's better because, you know, we the people have decided to buy his albums and our voice is the final voice. So I think what's really interesting is
navigating
up to a point, yeah, navigating this in this dialogue. At a certain point, you actually want to do the art, right? I mean, like sitting around and discussing dance is cool, but for at least for the dancers, you know, if Tone and Baba are having this long discussion about, you know, what is essential to house, they could probably have that discussion for the rest of their lives and never dance again, which would be a great loss to the dance scene. So I'd like it to stay recognizable, but at the same time, I like this kind of this ability to absorb, this ability to reject, this kind of this shifting identity of these dances.
It allows for a lot, a lot of creativity, and I think that's part of what's really important in, on the dance floor and in these competitions is showing originality and doing things that people don't expect, but still work. You're satisfying two different aesthetic boundaries here. And that's that's a lot of the challenge of these competitions.
Yeah, you test the rules. You gotta break the rules.
You gotta, you gotta push it. So yeah, so the competitions were a big part of Bust a Move, but then bonus, on top of that, next day, were workshops with all of these amazing people that were coming in to judge. So that people, besides getting the chance to be seen and compete in front of these awesome dancers, or watch the competitions, they also got a chance to follow the masters. I think that's a pretty big deal for these master classes, is getting a chance to see how the really great names actually move. From my perspective, when I see people doing street dance, as much as there are like specific moves and styles of motion, so much of it is about imitation that it's really hard to like articulate details. For example, in comparison to ballet again, we can talk about, you know, positions in ballet and steps, and we can have a sort of verbal description of the process, and you can have that in popping and you can have that in others, but it's still so much of it is just following the style of motion of, you know, these people that are great, our teachers. So part of it is this, the chance to see these, you know, these great names doing their improvisation, showing you the choreographies, how they do it, the details of what they're doing is like such an amazing opportunity to study. So you have, for the popping class that I sat through, there's like what, 40 people in that room? Like it was packed. And it's, you know, a big hardwood floor, studio space. It was at Salsa, etc. on Moab. And, you know, one wall of mirrors on one side. The teachers up in front, in this case Pop and Pete, a whole bunch of people are sort of making rows of dancing lines sort of behind, you know, and then trying to follow this great one through, well, what he did was a choreography. So first there's like a warm-up, doing some isolation work, getting people ready, prep to dance, and then going into learning choreographies, patterns of dances, and he would drill them progressively, bit by bit through this sequence, and then go back and clarify things that seem that people need some help to work through to get the entire choreography together. What was hilarious, though, is that I don't know how many people actually got the choreography. I would say that, like, up to half of the people participating probably knew it from beginning to end. Maybe couldn't execute it that well, but knew it from beginning to end. It's a very different class setting than some kind of weekly scheduled, ongoing sort of series, for sure. The student quality is completely different, right? Because you've got people that are already really, really good that are just there. You know, people that teach classes that are there to practice with this guy because he's, you know, still leading in this genre. While in this class, people were learning a choreography, so following Pete in a particular sequence of steps. He did put an emphasis on the importance of being able to improvise. And one way that he threw this sort of improvisatory sort of need in terms of being able to move independent of the setting and independent of a pre-worked pattern was by switching up the music all the time. That's something I've never seen somebody do in a workshop before, particularly if they are teaching a sequence of steps. It was like every time that he was asking people to like work through things, or like after he'd added some kind of thing, he would go ahead and find a new song for the class to dance over, and then they'd have to keep the same moves to music that's, you know, at a different beat with a slightly different feel, you know, at a different tempo. And so they were being challenged in this weird way to keep, I guess, the sequence in their heads and in their bodies as opposed to in their ears. I don't know. It was like, have you seen that often?
Well, yeah, I think that's pretty common in a popping class. And Pete highlighted this. He said, you know, don't worry, guys, you don't have to get this perfectly. We're not about to go on tour. In a certain type of dance class, I think the goal of teaching you this choreography is to give you the experience of what it might be like to do a choreography for a music video or do a sequence for a stage performance.
Mm-hmm.
If the purpose is to get you to improvise, then the purpose is not necessarily to get you to do this particular choreography, which we always do to this song. So it's not like I made this choreography just for this song, and so you have to learn it because all the shades belong to this, to these sounds in this song. But rather, here's the general form, and I'm going to be strict about these things, but there are certain shades that are going to change because we can do it to different music. So on the most basic level, the student is saying, okay, well, you know, where do I find the snare, for example?
So at the same time as having to learn the form, he's asking you to be able to present it differently depending on the actual music that you're working with. So by changing the music, he's encouraging a sensitivity to it, but at a very particular level. It's not like, oh, I'm going to plan out this sequence of steps differently because I know the break's going to be here. It's like, okay, I'm listening to the music. It has this vibe. It has this feel. I want to reflect that in how I'm dancing. Do you have to be really good already to be able to play around with that kind of stylistic detail?
Well, some of the more advanced ones, yeah. But I mean, the most basic one of being able to hear a new song and saying, oh, this is the snare in this song, like, that's
finding
a basic,
yeah,
finding the meter. That's a basic skill that you kind of need to develop. And so it's good that he's encouraging you to develop that.
So one of the issues that came up in Popping Pete's workshop that really struck me was this sort of establishment of authenticity. So one example of this was the Boulou roll. Anyway, there's a particular way of rolling, holding, sliding, changing position, and then continuing the roll that Pete wanted people to retain, to learn. And in the process of explaining this way of moving, which he said was kind of like you're sitting and then you're sliding sideways, he was claiming that this was something definitive about the boo-boo roll. This was how it should be done. And, I mean, okay, he's, you know, very close to boo-boo's him. So he's coming from the source, right? But does that really need to mean anything?
Well, I would say yes and no. I mean, what I would say is learn it that way. Try to understand that
the advantages of that,
the advantages of that are the points that are being made there, and then just dance.
One of the things that I enjoyed about the workshop is that Pete just seemed like he was having fun, you know, like he wasn't coming down hard on people. And I mean, like, as much as there was a sort of authenticity issue, it's not like he was making it, you know, a sore point or anything.
Do not do this.
Some of the things that Pete said kind of surprised me. One thing that he mentioned was that Boogaloo, specifically, was a mixture of the jerk and the twist. And what he was emphasizing in this was that these things are actually coming from, and this dance style is coming from, people just dancing around, you know?
Yeah.
People act like, you know, you can learn how to pop, and you can pop all you want, but if you're not doing it to music and if you're not dancing, then it's not popping, you know? It's not the dance form. You're just making jerky, pulsing motions. And, I don't know, he was trying really hard to get people to groove. But that's kind of hard to pick up on, you know? And what is a groove?
We would be standing almost still, and the very basic movements, the head bobbing, mm-hmm. kind of stepping of the feet, the shifting of the weight,
mm-hmm.
Looseness of the body.
What often comes up with a groove is having a kind of motion that has an oscillation to it. So you're shifting, there's a shifting back and forth, and it's an oscillation that's self-perpetuating. Like, you start grooving and you keep grooving. It's going to keep you going.
There's a momentum.
That's what I think
is meant by flow in that context.
Pete in the workshop was trying to get people to groove, to fill in the spaces from position A to position B, so that they were paying attention to that. When I was trying to watch him demonstrate groove, I kept on thinking of, like, just finding ways of bouncing your center of mass, you know? Because you can't groove without moving most of your body. I feel like that's somehow important. It's a kind of, like, the majority of you has to be following.
Well, I think it's translating musical feeling to movement, and I think that works best when musical feeling translates into a feeling of movement that you can feel all over. And if you only feel it in your pinky, then, you know, they're vast parts of your body that are not having any sort of musical sensation going on.
Mm-hmm.
And by moving your center of mass, mm-hmm. you're transmitting that information to
every part of your body, because it's all directed. So that's groove. I totally want to thank Spicy for inviting Fawn and I along to see this. It was great to get a chance to witness this phenomenon and to be able to talk about it and share that on the radio with you guys. Yeah, to everyone involved in the whole planning of Bust a Move, that was fantastic. I had a great time. I have nothing to compare it to, but it was still pretty awesome.
Of course, I'd like to thank Spicy, the whole team for contributing to an awesome event, great weekend, Daz and Jack Lucian for the Soulful Workshops, the DJs for the music, all the judges, Pete, Tyrone, Luther, Buddha, Khalif, Zig, Tony Styles, Adesla, and the Cat Pack. Peace.
Thank you.
Until next time, this is
Finn
and Fawn
bowing out.
Anniversary, the main Montréal Arrêt Art Culturel presents Eclectic, Friday and Saturday, May 29 and 30 at 9 p.m. Come and see 10 new creations of the theme Follies in dance, video, music, and performance by some of Montreal's most exciting artists. Tickets are available for only $10 at the May box office located at 3680 Jeanmans Street in Montreal or by calling 514-982-3386. Time to party, so let's go crazy. A CKUT co-presentation.
From May 27th to the 31st, MuTech, the International Festival of Digital Creativity and Electronic Music, returns for its anticipated 10th anniversary edition. Presented by Solotech in collaboration with Ubisoft. With over 100 artists and professionals and 70 performances in 5 days, the international scene converges on Montreal. Featuring Acufen, Carl Craig, Deadbeat, Matthew Johnson, Ricardo Villalobos, Nortec Collective, Mode Selector and Apparat's new project Moderat, Zombie Zombie, Ghislain Poirier, and many more. For the 10th year, Montreal becomes the focus point of the international electronic scene. Tickets and passes on sale now on mutech.org. A co-presentation of CKUT 90.3 FM.
Howdy, we're back. Yes, it's Movement Museum on CKUT 90.3 FM on your radio dial in Montreal, or movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer.
And it is 41 minutes past 2 o'clock this afternoon on this lovely, sunny, crazy May day.
And it looks like we now have everything under control. That was a wicked cool, what would you call it? Sound piece, reportage, column.
Oui, c'est ça.
Exactement.
And so then, yes, my one question is I know that you had said you didn't have anything to compare it to, but will you be going back next year?
If I'm in town, I very, very well may. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. Because that to me is always the key thing. It's not so much is how it compares at the beginning, but it's in terms of going forward.
Mm-hmm. Whether it inspires a return.
Yes.
Well, I'm realizing the more that I do this urban dance stuff that to really understand it, I'm going to have to try competing. But that's going to take me a while. So so we'll see if I'm still working on towards that goal at that point.
Okay. Cool. At which point we were supposed to be playing Doro's Dance Quote of the Week, but because I hit the wrong button, we already played that before.
We tricked you. That was a pop quiz right here on Movement Museum. We were just checking to see if you were paying attention.
If you could tell the difference between Margaret Graham.
You were like, wait a minute.
Montreal Urban Dance.
Martha Graham was not a popper.
Although I imagine at her time, or in her time, she was doing stuff that was as, pushing the limits as poppin' was when it started.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I'm sure she probably could have been a popper if she wanted to. She could do anything with her body, I think. Anyways.
At which point?
Switched it up.
We'd briefly mentioned, Karen, you had talked about stuff that you were going to see and so on. And there we have this sort of like awesome calendar thing. And yeah, there's a whole whack of stuff between the FTA and the off FTA and MUTEC, although MUTEC really isn't much dance as far as I can tell, except there are people in the audience who may or may not be swaying to something. Mm-hmm.
Although there is one dance project that I'll mention it's being presented as part of MUTEC and also as part of the off FTA. Mm-hmm. It's called Autofiction, and it's a trio for two dancers and a car. And it's a project that my friend Mila has created under her company Human Playground. Mm-hmm. It's going to be presented. It's a free outdoor show. It's going to be, it's outdoors, a big car. It's a Subaru, I think. It's going to be presented at the Esplanade of Place des Arts. I believe the dates are May 27th, 28th, 29th.
Are they going to have it open in time?
And June 3rd and 4th. I guess this is the big test. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm assuming so. Anyway, it should be a pretty interesting thing to check out if you're downtown. I believe the show times are 12:30 and 4:30, and they've had music composed for it, and it's there's some pretty amazing dancers. So
it sounds vaguely similar in terms of people dancing with machinery and stuff like that to the one that is happening down at the Old Port with the Beaugest Company, which I think you have in your booklet there, because I don't have my booklet for the FTA
this,
stuff.
This dancing with a backhoe phenomenon. This also looks really crazy.
Yeah, I'm hoping to try and score an interview with somebody or anybody. I think also the sort of backhoe operator might be the most interesting person to talk to.
Yeah,
because those things are crazy. I came across a backhoe shovel in a construction lot recently and tried to move it, and it was crazy heavy and gigantic, and I was like, oh, that's why it digs through asphalt so easily, because that would crush me in no time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that might be an interesting thing to interact with to music. Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the one thing that I also should mention is going backwards is last week I actually saw Sleeping Beauty done by Les Grands Ballets. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me that there were all sorts of we've been talking lots about non-linear and sort of cutting up choreography and doing things and making it, which all parodying and stylistically with La 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 Human Steps, who from my perspective did a lot of flippy and not an awful lot of good stuff. However, Sleeping Beauty done by Les Grands Ballets, it was sort of a parody version of Sleeping Beauty, which and fairly explicit in it as well. And so from my understanding, somebody mentioned to me in passing that all the 8-year-old girls who were coming to see Sleeping Beauty by Les Grands Ballets were somewhat, but just a little bit, I don't know, shocked maybe, or their mothers, I think, were shocked, or their grandmothers were shocked. But I thought it was phenomenal and stuff like that, because it was, well, there was a little bit of flippy involved. There was also sort of like hacking up of a fish. And,
a real fish?
From where I was sitting, it looked pretty gosh darn real.
Cool.
It's then they had like all the stuff that they had to clean up the stage with during the presentation, and so it wouldn't be far fetched for it to be a real fetch. But then it's also the sort of thing, I know they can do all sorts of amazing things with props.
That's true.
You can't eat a prop fish.
They actually just took a butcher's cleaver and whack, 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 and just chopped it up.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, after the show when they clean it up, if it's a prop fish, it's not going to be very tasty.
Yeah, that'd be the test.
Once it's been sort of on the stage, I'm not certain I'd want to eat it either.
Yeah.
But we weren't there for the fish. We weren't there for the soup, which they were theoretically making. We were there for the dance, which I thought was wonderful and amazing. It was just sort of taking the whole Sleeping Beauty story and twisting it on its ear and doing it in a really, really nice way.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So then, now got the sort of awesome calendar out of the way. We sort of got the, what we're going to be seeing, although I'm going to go see Corpora and stuff like that. At which point, does anybody mind if I start ranting about the papers last weekend? Because this is what I don't like.
That is definitely paper.
This is whatchamacallit, last weekend's Le Devoir, and over here is last weekend's La Presse. And it's, you'd been mentioning, Karen, about sort of how there are all these big ticket shows which will remain nameless, which sort of get an awful lot of advance hype, and everybody then shells out the 60, 70, 80 bucks for the primo seats so that they can impress their dates and so on and so forth, and then they don't live up to it. And that's with the newspapers, where they come in, because it's sort of dance has it, but it is not only dance that has it, where it's effectively there. You think it's a review of a show, when in actual fact, there's just some press agent who is going out and grabbing whoever, whether it's Victor Svoboda for the Gazette or Ali Naposta, whatever her name is, for La Presse, and saying, this is the press release, this is the most amazing thing since sliced white bread, and then they type it up as, what you want, retype it up, so it's 500 words that then gets added with a picture, and everybody goes, ooh, it's not a review, it's like a freaking ad. And then in La Presse, they had 3 pages for the FTA. In Le Devoir, they had 3 pages for the FTA. And this is the sort of thing where it's just, it's all this build up. I'd much prefer, and that's one of the things that I keep trying to do, is just if I'm, as opposed to hyping up stuff and saying, this is going to be most amazing, oh, let's go see it. And then if it's good, great. If it's not good, fine. But then report on it afterwards and be a responsible critic and a responsible reviewer.
But at the same time, you know, if you want to put off a successful festival of any kind, you have to do some serious press releasing and promoing beforehand. And if you want, out of all the 50,000 shows happening, if you want someone to see your show, then you got to have a good communication press person. So
I agree, you know. But it's also the sort of thing, I don't like the whole festival nature. I'd much prefer to see, like, take those 50 shows that are happening as part of the FTA, take those 75 shows that are happening as part of the off FTA, string them out over the whole year. And at which point then you can actually see some of them. There can be sort of like, you build up a community. It's this sort of like ad water. Everybody descends on Place des Arts and then goes away. It's like, hello, that's no way to do anything.
But I will say, though, I totally agree with you, Zeke, in that, like, I feel completely overwhelmed when these things happen. And at first I want to see everything, and then at a certain point I just feel like seeing nothing, because it's too hard to just figure out when I should be where and which show to pick and whatnot. But at the same time, as working as a professional dancer in the arts and knowing how it works in terms of funding and logistics of projects and different things like that, I think there's just something that works about festivals. And I mean, mm-hmm. there's festivals in every genre. Well, especially Montreal. I mean, we live in the capital of festivals of every art and cultural activity in the world.
Unfortunately.
For better or for worse. But so I guess there's the good and bad about it. I mean, I think that the good thing about it is, well, for one, in terms of community, like it brings this incredible, I think it's a great chance for artists to kind of
come together.
Together and to see each other's work. I mean,
I'm not so certain. If you have the festival that's happening, and at which point you're dancing in a piece that then is going up against six other things that are going, how are you going to see anything?
It's well, if you're because you dance for your thing, you dance for your things, and then there's still a lot of other stuff going on. But I would say that festivals are very important because it's an opportunity to galvanize the community in terms of passing a certain threshold of excitement and investment. And when people really take part in festivals, they're not like they're living their daily lives. They go into this like alternate state of being where they're festival goers. And so then it does make sense to be going to show after show after show. And a lot of the intensity comes from the jam-packedness of it. And you wouldn't have the same number of people participating in the festival if you didn't have all these big piles of shows.
No, I respectfully disagree because they're... I subscribed to two subscription series. There's the same buzz that happens, but it happens spread out for individual shows.
But it's also, you have to think about people coming in from out of town. That's a big draw that festivals have.
We're all going to FTA and off FTA stuff. I will buy you a drink if you can find me somebody who came in from out of town for either FTA or off FTA who is not performing in it.
Is that going out to all our listeners too?
Yes.
this is a contest.
All right. Well, if you're wanting
I'm going to mention, I'm just going to mention one other thing though. I think, okay, in terms of the off FTA, I think it's great when these things happen, when there's a big festival, you know, that's got a lot of big names and big ticket shows, and then it spawns an offshoot of that, like the off FTA, or, you know, similar to the off fringe or these different off festivals that happen that kind of become a platform for a lot of local artists, both emerging and more established. Mm-hmm. If they've got something they're working on or whatever, it's kind of the chance to put something out there and have it promoted. This is the other thing, as an individual artist, if you are presented under the umbrella of a festival, that's a lot of promotion that's done for you, and a lot of like mm-hmm. having being given a great venue and great technicians and whatnot that can be a lot harder to do on your own. So I would say, in terms of like for people that aren't members of those big companies or aren't the most established choreographers, the off festivals are a great opportunity for them. Also, I'm just going to mention there's a dance workshop called the, what is it called? Transformation Danse that happens. It starts on Monday, and it's a two-week, mainly contemporary dance, but their repertoire is pretty diverse, workshop that was launched, I think, 2 years ago as a kind of companion to the festivals as well, which is cool because it does draw a lot of young dancers in from other places, and so those people kind of come, and they just come, they in the day they train, and then at night they go see shows, and so I think it's a great chance to kind of inspire the up and coming community of Canadian dance artists as well. So
okay,
that was a big rant.
That's okay. I'll let you have the last word because we got to go to an ad right now.
The wait is over. The long and awaited CD release from Le Nombre is finally here. Ville et Fantastique, their third album, will be available in record stores on May 19th. Don't miss the show at the CD launch party on May 27th at Divan Orange, 4234 Saint-Laurent Boulevard at 9 p.m. Buy your tickets at bonsound.com/store. This is a CKUT and Bon Sound co-presentation.
How's that a way to shut a rant off in almost mid-sentence? It's 2:55 on Thursday, I think today is. Yes, and it's you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
90.3 FM.
What did I say?
I'm just repeating it. It's that effective echo thing, you know, we're amplifying each other.
90.3
FM. on your radio dial and movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer. And yes, if anybody out there wants to take advantage of my offer to find me somebody who came in from out of town for the FTA or the FTA, our email address is movement@ckut.ca. And yeah, there, I think it's coming sort of to the end of our show, and I'd like to thank Finn, Fawn, Karen for, helping out and making everything run. I got one sort of last question is sort of what do you guys got lined up for next week? Because next week we are shifting things.
Well,
with a film review.
Oh, dear.
No. Please. Yes.
We actually do have a film review.
Yeah.
Although it's the sort of thing where it probably will be an entertaining film review from my understanding. You guys have an actual week to come up with all the awesome lines you can.
Just stay tuned. And also, next week we're going to be in the thick of the FDA and OFDA festivals. So we're going to be talking about shows we've seen and previewing upcoming shows. And we're hopefully going to have a few special guests in the studio with us, some artists performing in the festival who can maybe share their experience from the inside. So stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, check the websites of the OFF FTA and the FTA. Do a bit of reading before you go out and spend your money on those tickets. But there are some great gems to be found and lots of free stuff as well. So, woo. That's what's happening.
And at which point, I'd like to thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for positive vibes.
And enjoy the sunshine.
And as now Roger says, oh, missed the chorus.
Dancing with my baby drives me crazy, makes me hazy.